It says up there, my name is Paul Simmons. The day job is I'm the CISO of ICI, which for the Americans in the audience is the third largest chemical company in the world. You'd know us if you're a regular visitor to Home Depot as Glidden Paints, Ralph Lauren Paint, Liquid Nails, and your wives, girlfriends will probably be wearing one of our perfumes. Unfortunately, we only make the base product. We don't get all the markup that those nice people make from putting it in with a little bit of alcohol and a glossy marketing. But there we are. For my sins, the nighttime job is I sit on the board of a thing called the Jericho Forum. For those of you who are here, for the last 2 years, we did the keynote 2 years ago here, and last year spoke about the progress that had been made. Jericho has existed for about 2.5 years. This is a double session. The way this session is going to work is, I'm afraid, session one you have to put up with me. It's a deperimeterization primer. Don't try to say that after the parties tonight. It doesn't come out right. But it's a deperimeterization primer. We're going to talk about a thing called the Jericho Forum Commandments. And then, being this is basically one of the last sessions of the day, a whole load of free stuff you can take away with that's sitting on the website at the moment. I'm going to run through it, what it is, what you can use, what you can take into your businesses and take away with you. After that, session two is going to be basically a panel discussion where we're going to outline what we're calling the Jericho Forum Challenge. This is year two of the Jericho Forum Challenge, but it's bigger, better, and has an awful lot more prize money attached. Currently negotiating with people at the moment, but we are talking $250,000. If we can get the sponsorship. No, seriously, currently it's underwritten to the tune of about $50,000. So it's still serious. Okay, so that's what's going to happen this afternoon. We're going to pray that this PC stays working. It's very sick at the moment. It keeps on blue screening, so we'll thank Mr. Gates if it does that halfway through this presentation. Okay, so for those of you first a show of hands, who has not heard of the word deperimeterization before? Oh, one brave person at the back. Thank you very much. I'm presuming everyone else has. Okay, so what is it? Well, it's this. It's fundamentally an acceptance that in today's world, most decent exploits, we've been hearing about the decent exploits throughout the 2 days of the conference, most decent exploits are going to transit your perimeter security. For those of you who got hit by Blaster, who got hit by Slammer, you know, application attacks now are the name of the game. I was sitting in a presentation earlier and someone was quoting Gartner saying 70% of attacks are application-based attacks. No, you know, sure, the automated tools are out there, the script kiddies are still attacking your perimeters, but at the end of the day, that's a nuisance. It's noise. It's not a serious attack anymore. Anyone with a serious attack is going to find other ways inside your organization. All your perimeters are doing are inhibiting business. That's the reality. So you're letting through email, you're letting through web. Phishing exploits both of those at the end of the day. They're trying to get, you know, send you an email to get you to click on a poison website, because they know that's the easy way through into your organization. And, you know, as a CISO, if I went to my board and said, we think the web is a little bit too risky, we'd like to switch it off. Yeah? What's known as a CLM, or a career-limiting move. Yeah? You're going to have to let through voice over IP through your border sooner or later. You probably haven't been asked to do that quite yet. It's probably sitting inside your organization. But within the next year, you'll be told, business imperative, let through voice over IP, because we have a need to actually communicate or add to our phone exchange outside of our organization. All those home workers, all those distributed call center workers, whatever you have inside your organization, I can guarantee you it will happen. You're letting through more and more encrypted traffic, you know, SSL, TLS, VPNs, the whole lot. We all have multiple partner connections. I have 3,000 different connections into my organizations from organizations that I don't control. Yeah? To give you a size of my network, the network that I own runs in 335 sites in 55 countries and has 35,000 IP addresses on it. And on top of that, I have 10,000 laptop users roaming around the world, And I said, I've got about 3,000 joint venture business partner connections of some description or another connected to my network. Can I control them? No. Let's be honest about this. Yeah. No, I'm not sure it's my network. Absolutely. This is why we're talking about deperimeterization. Yeah? It's not a question of deperimeterization as a concept. It's deperimeterization has happened to you. You might not have realized it, but it's happened to you. And what I'm saying is I'm a very normal corporation. So if you don't recognize that picture, I'd probably argue that you're missing a trick. It's happened to you already. So what's its effect? And this goes exactly to your point. The first one, your border has effectively become a quality of service boundary. The only reason you're running a very expensive MPLS network to connect all your corporate sites together is you want to have some guarantee of how fast and how reliably the traffic roams around inside your network. That's assuming you don't get hit by Blaster or Slammer or whatever thing else, you know, that takes your network down. But assuming you don't have a major virus outbreak or worm outbreak inside your network, owning your own network, to some extent, guarantees you quality of service. Does it guarantee you security? Not much. We certainly don't regard it as a quality of service boundary anymore. And certainly protection has little or no benefit at the perimeter because you can't control it. Ultimately, here's the key one. It's easy to protect data, your crown jewels, the closer you get to it. I was in Denver about a year back, and President Bush was visiting. And they shut off all the roads. As you could tell he was coming, because they shut off all the freeway and put police cars over all the bridges and everything else. And then about 20 minutes later, this motorcade came streaming through. Yeah, it's called close protection. Yeah, all the governments do it to their senior politicians. The reality is it's easier to protect something the closer you can actually get to it. Do you rely on your border guards and your customs agent to protect your president? And the answer is absolutely not. Why? Because it's daft. And that's not a reflection on how good the American border service is. You asked me about that one over a beer. If anyone wants to see it, I'll catch me later. I'll bring down the green form for aliens to visit. Anyone know what moral turpitude is? Have you ever been convicted of moral turpitude? Is one of the questions on the back of the immigration form for a British citizen. There we are. So if anyone can tell me what moral turpitude is. Okay. It's easier to protect the data the closer we get to it. It's obvious when we think about it. We've said this before, hardened business, you know, it's at odds. What we're trying to do at the border is totally at odds with the business saying do it faster, quicker, cheaper. And ultimately, it's this. Hardened perimeter strategy is unsustainable. You might still have, I still have a hardened border, supposedly hardened border. I have firewalls. Yeah, I have a network that I currently run within ICI. But ultimately, your hardened perimeter strategy is unsustainable. So what is it actually? What does it boil down to? Well, first of all, deperimeterization is a concept. It's not a solution. And it's going to be different for everyone in this room. It's how we solve the business needs, my business need for my business. It's a concept. I apply the concept my way to solve my business needs. You take the same concept and apply the concept in your business to solve your business needs. The principles are exactly the same, and we're going to talk about principles, the principles in a minute when we get on to the commandments. But the principles are exactly the same, but the solutions may be different. So it's not about there's going to be a standard for deperimeterization, or you're going to go out and buy the tool from this company that's going to solve all your deperimeterization problems. You'd be surprised after I've done talks like this, you know, the salesman who come up to me and says, I've got the solution. And I say, yeah, but I don't know what the problem is yet. ultimately, for businesses, it's how you leverage all those new opportunities, and we'll talk about some of those later. I can talk about some of the ways we're leveraging the opportunities for actually deperimeterizing. It's a set of solutions. It's a framework. It is defense in depth. A lot of people say you know, but surely you're driving a coach and horses through the whole concept of defence in depth. And I say, well, what do you mean by defence in depth? And they say, well, we have a perimeter, and then we have network segregation, and we have some more firewalls, and we have some more network segregation, and we have some VLANs. And I say, yeah, but aren't you doing anything other than network? So it is defence in depth. You know, people contrast the concept of certainly the Middle Age forts, where you had, you know, the castle keep, where you kept your crown jewels. If you've been to London, we still keep the crown jewels in the castle keep. And then you have a series of perimeter defences. But when you actually look at what they did, it wasn't just one wall after another. Every single layer of those defences was different. If you got through the moat at the first line, you then got hit by the archers firing the arrows high into the air. If you then managed to get up to the wall, they would drop stones on you or boiling oil. You then had to scale the wall, and at the top there were men actually with swords and spears to push the ladders back and everything else. And then if you got in, there was another layer of defences, etc., etc. Every single type of defence was different. It wasn't the same one repeated over and over again, which is what we do with network security. Ultimately, it's business driven, unashamedly. And it's not a single solution, it's a way of thinking. So, where does the Jericho Forum fit into this? Well, the big problem is that 3 years ago when we started this, no one else was discussing the problem. Basically, a bunch of mainly European, but all with global responsibilities, CISOs, were sitting around after a conference much like this, drinking beer and you know, complaining about the state of the world and not getting enough money to do the job and, you know, all the other stuff you discuss after these things. And the problem is, we all sort of sit and complaining, and I've got another checkpoint. Anyone here from Checkpoint? Okay, right, that's fine. You know, we all complain that, yes, I've got another Checkpoint salesman trying to sell me a deep packet inspection firewall, saying my deep packet inspection firewall goes deeper than his deep packet inspection firewall and will go at gigabit speeds rather than LANs, you know. And we all say, yeah, but we don't want that. It's not where we see our businesses going. So, you know, everyone was fixated on perimeter-based designs, or the industry was 3 years ago, and someone actually needed to point out, you know, the king's new clothes. You know, the king has no clothes. This is a problem to the world. And basically, we needed to start the discussion. So, yeah, unashamedly, the deperimeterization word got invented. For good or bad, probably bad, it's a bit of a mouthful, but it does accurately define the problem. What's in it for us? Because at the end of the day, you know, I get paid to do a day job. I don't get paid to do the Jericho Forum. I don't get paid to, you know, by my company to stand up here before you. What's in it for us? We need solutions. At the end of the day, as a CISO of a large global corporate, I need to be able to buy solutions to solve my problems. And if the industry out there isn't making them, I've got a problem down the line when my business says we want to do this, that, or the other. So we need to stimulate the market, or we needed to stimulate the market 3 years back, and actually get the industry discussing the problem and getting the products. I mean, the bottom line is that if you want something in 2 years' time, it's in the R&D labs today. So if you don't influence it, you're not going to get it. More importantly, the solutions have to use open standards, and this is key. Because as we talk about moving outside of our individual businesses and our individual sort of locus of control, where we get to set the standards because they're all our machines, now we're working with consultants who might work 2 days on your site and 3 days on someone else's, and trying to say to them, you've got to have Symantec antivirus to work on our site, otherwise admission control won't work. And he says, yes, but company Y, who I'm working for on Friday, insists that I've got to have McAfee, otherwise their admission control won't work for them. It's brain dead, isn't it? We've got to have flexible solutions, and flexible solutions mean open standards at the end of the day. It doesn't mean open software. Don't get me wrong, I'd be very hypocritical standing up here as a New York Stock Exchange quoted company and saying we want free software. At the end of the day, you know, my board's aim is to make money for ICI and my shareholders. And I wouldn't deny that of any company out there, but business models differ. Ultimately, though, It's all about standards. And if you can get the interoperability standards correct, actually everyone makes a lot more money. So, just a little bit of history. 2004, January, was the initial composition. Jericho and its members spent the first year gazing at its navel, if you like, looking at the problem space. What we wanted to do is actually have no vendors involved whatsoever, so that we could do just that in isolation, look at the problem and go away and say, this is the problem as we see it. Let's define the problem space properly first, and then we'll talk to the vendors. Otherwise, of course, you end up with some of the crazy situations we've had in the past. I mean, everyone knows about the WiMAX battle. I think it was Intel and Motorola, wasn't it, who was duking it out in public over the WiMAX standard? I can't remember. But anyway, you get into some pretty crazy situations. So we wanted to say, look, let's define it. And we spent a year doing that. We passed that at the end of 2004, and early in 2005, vendors have been allowed to join. And actually, this is an old slide, because we've now got many more than 12 vendor members. We also formed an alliance with an open group, because at the end of the day, what we didn't want to do is spend a lot of my life actually in the administration of this organization, because at the end of the day, I said I don't get paid to do this. So we aligned ourselves with the Open Group for a number of... Everyone familiar with the Open Group? Anyone not heard of the Open Group? Good, there we are. Oh, one. Oh, sorry, okay. The Open Group is based out of California. It's got offices around the world. It understands... I mean, the Open Group owns things like the Kerberos standard and everything else. So the key tenant, and one of the things we aligned with the Open Group for, is that the Open Group was pledged to ensure that all its output was free and for public use. So royalty-free, standard, you know, royalty-free, you could take their output and you could use it without any problems. And we were very aware that anything that Jericho developed or came up with, we wanted people to be able to take without saying, there's going to be a royalty to pay or anything else. But obviously we still need to retain the intellectual property rights to it. So the Open Group framework is really good for us because it meets our aspirations as a group. It does all the administration for us. It looks after us. It, you know, does the sheepdog bit, keeps us all in order, makes us attend meetings, minutes the meetings and everything else, and organizes things for us, but leaves the Jericho Forum members to actually get on doing the work. It's a global organization. And ultimately, their tagline is this thing called boundaryless information flow, which you'll see actually matches deperimeterization quite nicely. So, aims. I think we've talked about most of these. Drive and influence the discussion, change the mindset. Well, you know, if people have heard of deperimeterization, we've obviously succeeded in something, if not, you know, just getting the word into the world. Really, the couple of key things, refine, distinguish what a Jericho Forum architectural principles versus just plain old good security design. A lot of people come up and, you know, when I speak and say, aren't you actually, all you're actually talking about is just good security design? To which the answer is no, we're not. We're talking about, yes, you know, good security design is a fundamental principle, but at the end of the day, it's good security design to do this. And we'll talk about what this is in a minute. Build and Work published the visioning document. The visioning document was the original white paper we published after a year of inward looking at ourselves, freely available on the Jericho Forum website. Define the key messages. Clarify there's not one, just one Jericho Forum solution. What it's not another standards body. There is not going to be a Jericho Forum stamp of approval. This product is Jericho Forum approved. It's not a cartel. It's not about buying a single solution. It's not here to compete or dismantle existing good security, but it is there to build on it. So in terms of members, you've visited all the vendor booths out there with these are our customers. Well, these are our members, or some of them anyway. These are the ones who agreed to be named. You'll notice a few names, hopefully, that you'll recognize up there. And on the panel later, you'll have some Jericho Forum members and some not Jericho Forum members up there. But in terms of some interesting one, Motorola, we were at Motorola earlier this year. They hosted our US public conference, which was very nice of them. We have Qantas on the board. We have Boeing on the board, hot off the press. Steve Whitlock, who's going to be on the panel later, has just been voted onto the Jericho Forum board. Procter & Gamble sit on the board up here. We have Cisco as members. Symantec are active members. Cisco are active members. IBM are active members. So it's good, and a lot of people contributing an awful lot. So let's get on to commandments. So the rationale, Jericho Forum, in a nutshell, deperimeterization in a nutshell, your security perimeters are disappearing. They're not quite gone yet, but they are disappearing. So what are you going to do about it? This is your challenge for the next couple of years. And for us, we need to express what, why, and how to do it, but in high-level terms, set a set of principles. So, and again, distinctions between good security, i.e., principle of least privilege, which is, you know, that's just good security. Does that make it Jericho? Absolutely not. Yeah, and deperimeterization, which is the end-to-end principle. And ultimately, here's the rub, why should I care? Well, deperimeterization is a disruptive change. It is going to change the way you do things. It is going to need you to go back to your board and say, you know those really expensive deep packet firewalls that I've been telling you and you've been forking out money for the last 5 years? Well, they're not actually doing you much good. You're going to have to do something else, and you're going to have to fork out some more money to do something extra, different, whatever. You can recover some of that money, but you're going to recover that other ways. So yes, you're going to spend more money on security, but you are going to save money elsewhere. And that might be improved business processes. It might be faster to market. It might be the fact you're going to save a lot of money on your networking. But ultimately, you're not necessarily going to recover it via the security route. But here's an interesting difference, because the story you are having with your board and with your senior management is about security making a business difference. Security being a business enabler, rather than the boys who like to say no. So, huge variety of starting points, huge variety of technological dependencies, large appetite for change, because with this comes the ability to mobilize. Ultimately, what we need to do this is a rule of thumb. What we do not need is a Bible or a cookbook. Do it this way, and it'll solve all your problems. And it's a benchmark. And this is what the commandments are. So here's how they're structured. And unfortunately, like most things, you know, Jericho obviously has the biblical reference behind it. Joshua 6, verse 20, I think, offhand, if I remember rightly. You know, the walls of... They blew the trumpets and the walls of Jericho came tumbling down. We tried to get the commandments down to 10 commandments and never succeeded. But there we are. So we have 11 commandments in there. Fundamentals, 3 fundamental commandments, 2 about surviving in a hostile world, 2 on the need for trust, 1 on identity management and federation. That one's probably at some point going to split. Well, the feeling is that once we actually properly get into identity management and federation, it's such a huge subject, it's going to need more than one commandment in there. But at the moment, it's just one commandment. And then 3 on access to data. So here's the first one. And it's obvious when you look at it, isn't it? The scope and level of protection must be specific and appropriate to the asset at risk. How often do we put one-size-fits-all solutions into our business? Doesn't matter what it is, we're going to protect it. And it's going to cost you X to protect it. And it doesn't matter actually whether it's high risk, low risk. How many people here classify their data? Okay, keep your hands up. Okay, for those of you who classify your data, keep your hands up if you think you do it really well. Thank you for being so honest. The problem with protecting any asset that you have is you have to know how it's classified, and if you're not doing good classification, and to be honest, none of us do. I don't. We don't as an organisation. It's absolutely dreadful. We do it. We have a standard and we apply it. But we don't apply it very well and we don't apply it consistently. And that's pretty normal for most organisations I've come across. I think the only exception was when I worked for Motorola. Anyone here from Motorola? No, okay. Motorola do it pretty well in my experience. But only because they lost a couple of court cases and they were forced into doing it. So you have to have the pain to actually drive something like data classification. So the problem is, if you don't know what your assets are out there and how they're classified, how do you provide appropriate protection for them? Well, that's an interesting one. But at the end of the day, what you don't want to do is overclassify. The biggest problem with classification is that people, by default, overclassify. And with this one, business demands that security enables business agility and is cost-effective. You actually want not too much, and you want enough security, but not too much, because that makes it cost effective and it makes it agile. And again, here's the bottom one. In general, it's easy to protect an asset the closer the protection is provided. Again, it's obvious when you think about it, but it's a fundamental. Here's the second one. Complex security doesn't work. How many people had PKI projects 5 years back? How many of them worked? Thank you, Justin. This is Justin sitting down the front from VeriSign here. So probably only one of the few solutions that does actually work. I have to say, when I came into ICI 4.5 years ago, they had £500,000 budget line item for PKI because they thought it would be a good thing and everyone else was doing it. And all the salesmen was telling them that this is the year of PKI. So they had this wonderful budget line item, and I sort of sent a note out to all the CIOs of all my business lines and said, I have this budget line item for PKI, and it's going to fund the implementation, but after year one, you're going to have to divvy up the costs between you to keep it running. So what I'd like to know is how many users are actually going to use this, such that I can split the costs appropriately across all your businesses. I have 35,000 users, and I had 15 who owned up to wanting PKI at a cost of £500,000. So what's that? Just under $1 million. So we canned it. We binned it. We got rid of it. And we spent the money on something much more sensible that actually brought some business value. And what we went out to do is, for those 15 users, we said, go to VeriSign, buy your $15 personal certificates. I mean, how's that for a return investment? 15 times $15 versus, you know, $1 million. That's a pretty good return on investment. And we put the money to good use. So unnecessary complexity is a threat to good security. Again, it's obvious when you write it down and state it, isn't it? But if you think about it, we have some very, very complex solutions out there that we're trying to manage and maintain. Firewall rules are the obvious one. I have nine touch points where ICI touches the internet, and we obviously have firewalls and everything else there. And periodically we review those firewall rules, and you sort of sit there with this big, huge list of firewall rules and go through them and say, well, that server doesn't exist anymore. I haven't got a clue why that server was put in. And quite often, your only solution to working out why the firewall rule is there is to take it out and watch who screams. So unnecessary complexity is a threat to good security. Security mechanisms must scale. The only way you get things that scale is keep it simple. If it's complex at the start, at the macro level, I can guarantee you it is not going to scale. And to be both simple and scalable, interoperable security building blocks need to be capable of being combined to provide the required security mechanisms. Yeah? This is the bit, interoperable security. You have to have standards to have interoperable security. This is a fundamental. This is not as obvious as the other two when you look at it. Assume context at your peril. How often do we build a solution and we go through all the rigor and checking and analysis, and then the business goes and changes it? You build this wonderful solution on the assumption that you're... we did it with PeopleSoft. We put a PeopleSoft solution in. So PeopleSoft version 8, brand new solution. New servers, new hardware, new architecture, went through all the rigor of designing this system to service our human resources folk. And the only access to this was inside ICI, obviously, because, you know, it's managing people who work inside ICI and HR folk who work inside ICI. So the assumption when they did all the design and building it was that it was only ever going to be internal access. A year after they put it in, guess what they came and said? We now need to do self-service for people at home. So people can sit down with their spouses and their partners and whatever, and they can choose, you know, and elect their benefits. So they can choose how their money's invested on 401ks, what are they called? I got it right, there we are. It's not bad for a Brit, is it? So 401ks and your money's invested, and, you know, you elect your what benefits you want for your children and feed their social security numbers in. And we went, social security numbers? Ooh, over the internet? Ooh. Yeah, okay. From home PCs? From all our staff? Yeah, okay. And of course, the model we built and approved and checked and everything else was all about an internally delivered solution. You know, we'd actually sat there with them and said, you're never going to want to access this from outside ICI, are you? And they said, no, of course not. So, assume context at your peril. And the problem is, too often, I mean, at least in that situation, my security team were heavily involved at all stages of the project, including the redesign to allow home access. And it works really well, and it's secure, and my team did a really good job, I'm pleased to say. The issue goes that too often we put a solution in design for one thing and then just tweak it or modify it or move it to do something else. Or, I don't know, take your HR system and move it from Germany, where of course you're under data protection, into a data center inside Arlington, Texas, where you don't have European data protection legislation, which they did on me. But that's another story. So problems, limitations and issues come from a variety of sources. Geographic, we've talked about. Legal, we've talked about. Technical, we've talked about. Acceptability of risk. You have to assume context at your peril. And people do things and change things. Ultimately, what you design for one scenario, one environment, may not transfer to the others, but too often people just assume it will. Okay, commandment number 4. Here we get into surviving in a hostile world. Devices, applications must communicate using open and secure protocols. Again, it's really obvious when you say it, isn't it? What is the default mechanism for logging in to an updating? Well, no, logging in first. Logging into a brand new Cisco MPLS router. Telnet, absolutely. Username, password, all data sent in clear. If you want to update it, TFTP. Fantastic, yes. No username, no password, all data sent in clear. Wonderful, isn't it? I shouldn't say this because Cisco Jericho Forum members. But I mean, if you want a brain dead, this is supposed to be a technologically advanced running the internet on all our behalves. Running the US military, you know, the DOD, they keep on telling us the DOD relies on Cisco powered networks. Talk about brain dead. Yep, and how many people change it? Yep. Yes. Yes. default secure out the box has to happen. It really is as simple as that. Devices, applications must communicate using open and secure protocols. Yep, I'd agree. And some of them don't exist. You know, anyone care to name a secure standard for voice over IP? IPsec is not a secure standard for voice over IP, because voice over IP, any voice traffic, I'm ex-Motorola, by the way, get me onto a hobby horse. But at the end of the day, voice over IP, any voice protocol has to keep the time going so the conversation stays in sync. So the rule on any voice protocol is, if I have a glitch, drop the packet, keep the time synchronization. What's the rule behind IPsec? If I have a glitch, retry until I fail. IPsec is not a good solution for anything. Anything. It might be a great sticking plaster solution, a band-aid solution for you for us at the moment, and we use it. Hey, this thing's got a Cisco IPsec on it, and that's how I, you know, get my secure ID card out, get back into the ICI network. So yeah, sure, we use it. It's not a good solution for lots of reasons, but certainly not for voice over IP. Security through obscurity is a flawed assumption. We all know this, but we keep repeating the same mistakes. Secure protocols demand open peer review. I mean, I don't really need to tell this community here, this one, but you'd be surprised how many times we fall foul of this. You know, another closed protocol, Skype being the obvious one. You know, Skype on the face of it seems to be reasonably secure. There are enough papers around it, including a few from Skype themselves, that, you know, actually say this is secure. But the problem is, because they won't publish them, there's no peer review. No one can actually say definitively, yes, it is or it isn't. They're their own worst enemy in that respect. Although I'm told the Chinese have now reverse engineered Skype. Yep. Yes. Yes. The answer is it's hard, but if we don't try, we won't get anywhere. And I know that's easy for me to stand up here and say, and it's very glib, but it is the reality. Go back to the number of members we have sitting on that list, and I would argue that there's a hope that we can shift the market in some aspects. Yes. Yes, it's a problem, and yeah, you're right. There is, you know, things like SMTP TLS exists out there, and you know why aren't you using it? Why aren't we using more secure standards? And you're absolutely right, and this is the crux of the problem. It takes everybody in this room to walk away and say we are going to use a more secure standard. We're going to force our vendors to provide things out the box. Yeah, but if you don't ask, you're not going to get. And the problem is, you talk to most of the vendors, and most of the vendors I've talked to say, yeah, but no one's asking for it. We accept the status quo too readily. Yep. I totally agree with you. Yes. Yeah, I mean, we're screaming in agreement here. I totally and utterly agree with you. But the problem is, you're not going to do that. I'm not going to do that as ICI. You're not going to do that from your organization. If we influence people like USDOD, if we influence some of the major companies on there, if we influence the Ciscos of this world, dare I say it, the Microsofts of this world, that default out the box should be secure email, maybe we stand a chance. But if we don't ask, we don't get. So yeah, I mean, we're screaming in agreement here. goes back to the IPsec, encrypting encapsulation should only be used when appropriate. It does not solve everything. We'll come on to why in a minute. All devices must be capable of maintaining their security policy on an untrusted network. In other words, I should be able to run, I might not choose to, I'll probably be daft to choose to, but I should be able to run my entire business with all my devices plugged into the raw internet. Might not work particularly well because, you know, denial of service and packets and storms and all the other stuff going on out there. But at the end of the day, from a security point of view, there is no reason why you shouldn't, in the brave new world, run your entire business connected to the raw internet. Lots of probably business reasons and practical reasons why you wouldn't choose to do that. The main one being quality of service on that network. But you should be able to do it. Trust. Here's a biggie. There is a need for trust. We all know there's a need for trust. That's why phishing works so effectively, because we haven't got a clue who sends those emails. All people, processes, technology must have declared and transparent levels of trust for any transaction to take place. Ultimately, if I'm transacting with my bank should be able to verify that it's Paul Simmons who is doing the transaction against his account. And conversely, I should be able to guarantee that it's actually the Nationwide Building Society that I'm logged into. Are the guys from the Nationwide here, actually? I don't think they are, actually. Anyway, we've got a couple of guys from the Nationwide in the UK here. But anyway, I should be able to guarantee that it's the Nationwide Building Society website that I'm actually logged into, rather than some spoofed website. And again, like the last one, this isn't easy. I'm not here to sell you solutions. I'm not here to give you many solutions today. What I'm giving you is a whole bunch of problems that still need solving, which is why the Jericho Forum still exists. So, yeah, it's not easy, and there's an awful lot of work. The problem is, not many people are doing any serious work in this area at the moment. And the Jericho is looking to kickstart some work in this area, particularly with some of the universities around the world, because it is that kind of academic rigor you need to apply to this problem to make this work. In terms of trust, you have to have trust models for people, organizations, devices, and infrastructure. And more importantly, you have to have trust, because trust varies by location, transaction type, user role, and transactional risk. If you think about it, who here banks on the internet? Most people. What happens? You have a gate guard, don't you? You get into your account and it says, give me your username and your credentials to prove who you are. And then it doesn't matter what you do. If I want to find out the balance on my account, I can find out the balance of my account. If I want to transfer some money, I can transfer some money. It's all done by the gate guard at the front. If you think about what we should be doing, and it goes back to the earlier Jericho principle of risk-based security. If what I want to find out is what is my, as a member of the bank, what my privileged mortgage rate, if I wanted to switch my mortgage, is, well, what do I need to go in there to find that out? Probably a cookie. At the end of the day, the competitor banks are going to know what their private rates are. Who are they protecting it from? No one, really. You know, I've been on the bank site before, there's a cookie from being there before, it'll let me in to find that information out with purely a cookie. If I want to go and view my account balance, what's good? Username and password? Absolutely fine, probably, because it's a low-risk view-only transaction. If you find out that I've only got £243 in my account, well, I don't really care. At the end of the day, as a personal bank. But the instant that I go and say, I want to transfer £35,000 out of this account into one outside, does it make me get out my secure ID card? Absolutely it should, because the transactional risk has changed. But what do we do? One size fits all solution and a gate guard. It says, once you're in, do what you like, from low risk to high risk. Trust level has to vary. It varies by location. Am I going to really trust this transaction if the IP address resolves to something in Russia, rather than the fact because this guy is a UK account holder and every other time he's accessed his account from England? Should that change the transactional risk? Absolutely it should. How many banks do that? I doubt many. A whole bunch of work needs to be done in this area. And at the end of the day, trust is one way, isn't it? We still have this mainframe mentality that we trust the mainframe. I was in, I can't remember which talk it was earlier, they were talking about we're going back. It was the Ajax vulnerabilities talk. You know, we're going back, aren't we, with websites to a mainframe mentality where effectively your PC, your very complex PC on your desk or your home office has become just a dumb terminal to display HTML. And we still have this mainframe mentality that says mutual trust, you know, that says we trust that box we're connecting to. The server out there, whether it's the bank or Amazon or eBay or whatever, we trust. And we have to authenticate ourselves to them. They never have to authenticate themselves to us. It becomes more important when you start doing B2B rather than B2C. We do transactions with Walmart. We sell rather a lot of paint to Walmart, as you can imagine. Walmart have their ERP server, as you can imagine, behind their firewalls, inside their organization, sitting in their, you know, part of their crown jewels, nicely guarded. We do the same for paint production. What we want to do, of course, is we want customer information of how well our paint is selling from Walmart. They want to be able to place orders on us because if we can produce paint just in time for them, we both save money. So wouldn't it be nice, and this is where we talk about security as a business enabler, wouldn't it be really nice if my ERP system inside my organization could talk to their ERP system inside their organization and we could get transactional information of what's selling well in the stores and they could place orders on us, we could regulate production to produce paint just in time? Well, the answer is we do. And we use an inherently secure protocol called AS2. Which is EDI over HTTPS. It is an IETF standard, it is an open standard, and it allows us to do just that. Connect the two systems together, even though they're sitting inside our forts and our castle keeps. So the answer is, it is possible. Of course, the problem, yes. Because without the necessary levels of security, you would never let an open connection come in right from your firewall, right the way through all your layers of security to your crown jewel sitting in the middle of your organization. So unless you can secure the transaction all the way through your organization to allow one, and the same goes from Walmart. Yeah, that's right. Because we can support AS2 as a protocol, because we can put the connectors into both our systems, we now sign off on allowing you to do secure transactions, ERP system to ERP system, and we all save lots of money. And again, it's like our friend here, standards exist. AS2 exists. We were surprised. I mean, Walmart drove this more than we did. And we went out to our ERP vendor and we said, we want to use AS2 on our system. Oh, they said, yeah, fine, have the plug-in. Go out and buy it, it'll cost you this. 2 days later, it was in and working. Because it's a standard. Nothing to set up, it just worked. First time. How many times does that happen when you're doing anything secure? But it did. And it's out there, but how many people are using it? The answer is it's a really well-kept secret, like a lot of these secure protocols. Elements in terms of what? Yep. Okay. It uses certificates at both ends, so it enables both systems to have bidirectional trust. It's an encrypted protocol. So the data is travelling encrypted. The header is open, so you can tell it's AS2, so you can actually route it correctly, which is really nice from a network point of view, so you know how to handle the traffic at a network level. And at the end of the day, it has non-repudiation built in, so you can actually use it to place orders with.
Now, as an example, you've got just one customer.
Yep. We do. UPS use it. We use it independently on other systems with UPS. More and more customers are starting to use it. Oh, the problem is how you scale it, like everything else, because you've got key management to take into account. So yeah, is it foolproof? Does it scale to every single device you want to talk with? No, it doesn't. But it is a good example of, you know, the way to go. It's not perfect. Well, in the case of AS2, and I'm not an AS2 expert, but I'm assured that because the keys don't match, it'll reject it. Yeah, it's not a, to be yeah okay. AS2 as a protocol is not a protocol that you expose to the outside world and say come and use it. It's not something like SMTP TLS, which has a mode where you can just use it, and if not, it defaults back to something that's open. You know, come and use me. TLS spoken here kind of thing. AS2 is a protocol where you set up the keys at both ends. It's done by a business transaction. There's appropriate legal agreements that go with it because you're placing orders. So it's a different type of business connector. So yes, can you open it up for open use? No, it doesn't. It's not designed to do that in the case of AS2. Yes, you do. Yes. You absolutely. I mean, if someone maliciously set up an account with ICI and then used the credentials that we shared to actually place fraudulent orders, then you'd have a problem. But then, ultimately, that's a legal and commercial problem. I've never yet found any perimeter application that will de-encapsulate encrypted packets that are certainly encrypted from a server to server level. And I certainly wouldn't ever want to do that. Yes. Yeah, sure. People today are terminating at their boundaries, and then they're sending it unencrypted over their internal network, or they're re-encrypting it. The problem is certainly in terms of business process and business transaction. Do I really want to have some kind of broker service that's sitting in the middle of my end-to-end transaction? Because certainly if I got into a legal dispute, I'd probably lose at that point. I want to do it server to server at the end of the day. I want to do it application to application. But hey, as I said, this isn't about a single solution. This isn't about saying AS2 will solve your problems. This is about a set of commandments. Because as you're seeing by the debate, yeah, my solution for my business, in our case, doing business with Walmart, we use AS2, may be totally different to what you implement for your business, but as long as the principles and the commandments are obeyed, we should end up with secure solutions that hopefully mean that if your business and my business want to transact, we stand some chance of doing it. At the moment, it's very difficult. Okay. Moving on, so we hit the coffee break. Identity management and federation. Yeah, absolutely. This is a big one. Because as the big problem, as you've just heard, is To do things like AS2, you have to put in certificates at either end, and you feed them in manually, and they're great for individual business transactions. When you open yourself up for business and say, I've got secure protocols, come do business with me, it's a lot more problematic. And, you know, it's great, isn't it? You know, 10 years ago, it used to be really easy as a security person, because you either employed people as staff or, you know, they weren't staff, and you gave your staff accounts on the mainframe or the computer systems, and anyone who was non-staff, you didn't. Now, of course, I'm sure everyone in here is like us. You know, we employ contractors, temporary staff, people on short-term contracts, long-term contracts, you know, up to 50%. I think Steve in his case study with Boeing recently was saying, I think he has now more external users of his network than staff users, Boeing users of the network. Yeah, correct. Thank you. There we are. I remembered you, see, Steve. I was listening. So, you know, there's the problem, isn't it? How do you actually maintain all these users who operate outside of your locus of control on your network, and how do you let them in? Well, you know, there are efforts to go out there with federated identity. Jericho is not out there to go and tread on toes and say, well, we're going to do something different. Because, hey, you know, people are doing it, working on it. And the Jericho principle is very much, if someone else is doing it and doing it right, we're going to steer well clear of them and not reinvent the wheel. So, but the principles still exist within your organization. We need to be able to let people into our organization. We need to be able to share data. One of my problems is that, if you think about it, we're a company that does clever chemistry at the end of the day. Where's a lot of the clever chemistry being done? In the universities around the world. What is probably the worst place to actually share sensitive pre-patent information with? A university. Yeah, absolutely. You won't see my security nightmares. The problem is, if we're doing some kind of joint development with the university, and they've got, you know, their students who are, you know, on their final year or doing their doctorate or whatever coming in, and they work on your project for a year. But this is a project that's going on 4 years. And we all know what happens. We set the users up to first. When those users leave after a year, what happens? They hand their username and password over to the person who follows them. And then they hand it over to the person. So, you know, this Fred Bloggs who's working on your project left 4 years ago, but the account's still in use. We need some way of federating systems, people, and yes, it's being worked on, but it is a key part of actually making this thing work. Finally, access to data. Access to data should be controlled by the security attributes of the data itself. Again, pretty obvious. What do we do at the moment? Well, you know, you take your Microsoft system, and if you've got the ability to read the data, you can read the data off, you copy it onto a drive, now you're the creator owner of that data. Not only that, anyone on that server, because you've written it on there, who has read access to that data, now can access that data and read it. It's brilliant, isn't it? It's not security, though. It might be great for your users, but it's not security. It's not secure. At the end of the day, I should be able to say that the only two people... I've written a document, and the only person who can read it is Bob West sitting down the front here. And I can give a copy of that data to everyone in this room, and the only person who can read it is Bob. It is as simple as that. Well, it's simple to say, isn't it? A little harder to do. But that's where we have to go with data. The attributes have to be held within the data itself, or could be a separate system, it could be metadata or whatever. It doesn't really matter how you implement it, but the principle is the data has to control who can have access to it. You might choose to do it that way. I said, you know, Jericho isn't about saying you will do it this way. It's what works for you. You might... Yes, that's one way of doing it. Can you manage that? Because then you're into managing loads of keys and key escrow and all sorts of things. There are problems doing it that way. And of course you might want to say, well, actually, because this is public data, but all I'm concerned about is being read, I'm just going to fingerprint it or watermark it. And that's adequate. That goes back to the earlier principle of adequate security based on the risk. So if the risk is that I don't want this data tampered with, rather than I want to limit who can read it, then probably watermarking might be absolutely a valid method to use. It doesn't, because it's... Yes, it's digital signature or a method of watermarking. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Why not? What we're trying to say here is that Jericho is setting out a set of commandments, a set of principles by which you should be building deparameterized systems. We're not saying do it this way because this way is right. What we're saying is doing it in a way that meets the commandments but is appropriate to what you're trying to secure, and more importantly, it's appropriate for your business. Some of the key things that we have out there in terms of where we have problems: access to security could be implemented by encryption. Absolutely, it might well be. That's what you might choose to do. Data might have public, confidential, and non-confidential attributes. Access and access rights have a temporal component, and that is the one that's usually missed, is that it's actually fine encrypting that data. But let's talk about my company results. As a listed company on both London and New York, the biggest piece of information, the crown jewels of any listed company, is their annual result. At 1 minute to midnight, my company results are known by 5 people in ICI. That is it. At 1 minute past midnight, it's public information. The problem is, if you encrypt that data, how does it make that transition? It has a temporal component. And that's one that hasn't been adequately solved yet. 10, data privacy. This is where we get into the SOX area. Sorry about the dirty word. For those of you who have to deal with SOX. Data privacy and security of any assets of sufficiently high value requires the segregation of duty and privileges. Absolutely. Again, easy to say, harder to do. You need independent control. There has to be a weak... If you don't have the independent control, there's always the weakest link at the top of the chain. And administrator access must also be subject to these controls. Again, the one we always mess up on is dbAdmin. We all store... as large corporates, we store our data in these big databases, and we have a wrap around it to make sure that who can have access to it and who can't have access and everything else. But DB access, you can read the lot. Think about it. What we should be doing is combining some of the Jericho principles of actually providing access to that packet of data sitting inside that database table, so that in the case of a PeopleSoft system with an Oracle backend, as mine is, then what should happen is the only person who should be able to read that data is me, because it's about me. Certainly under European data law, that means I have a right to see it. Should be my boss. I'd like them to see it, because hopefully that means they're going to give me a pay rise at the end of the year, preferably a bonus. And whoever the HR person assigned to look after us. Should dbAdmin be able to read it? Absolutely not. Can they currently? On virtually every system out there. And finally, by default, data must be appropriately secured both in storage and in transit. So, out of the box, data should be appropriately protected. Removing the default must be a conscious act. High security should not be enforced for everything, because we don't want to make things more complex than they need to be. And appropriate implies varying levels, with potentially some data not secured at all if you don't need to do it. But we've all seen, it's Ernst & Young, isn't it, who keep on losing laptops with all this confidential data on it. it's crazy. I mean, you can switch on the Microsoft defaults and just encrypt the hard disk. And okay, that's not really Jericho stuff, because that's just saying we're just going to blanket encrypt this hard disk or the data areas on the hard disk using EFS. But hey, it works at the end of the day. But they're not doing that at all. They're just leaving it unencrypted. Yeah. Okay. In terms of the last 5 minutes, I'm just going to quickly run through. I was going to give you a whole load of free stuff. In terms of free stuff, everything Jericho produces is freely available. It is available for you to take and go and use within your businesses. It's available for you to go and start having a discussion with your vendors. It's available to do whatever you like with. At the end of the day, it is open source material. Freely available. Commandments, a 2-page document. Go get it, go use it, all yours. In terms of other documents, what Jericho is doing currently is we are working through the problem space, looking at some of the major issues that affect us, and producing what we call position papers on them. I'm not going to go into any of them in much detail, mainly because I'm going to go about 7 minutes until tea, and I'm not going to keep you from your refreshments. In the real world, you need secure protocols. We've talked about it beforehand. Go read the document. In terms of the tool we put together, this is what, you know, every consultant has to have a 4-box model. Well, you know, if you're Gartner, you do anyway. The reality is what we've done is we've done this with a 4-box model, closed and open, insecure and secure. And if you look at it, what we actually want to do is the space we're operating in is sort of down here. We're trying to move it to up here, but ultimately where we want to get to is the open and secure protocols up there. And we can debate which protocols go in which box currently and where we got missing protocols, which is a good discussion point. And actually, it's a good argument point to have of which protocols fit in which boxes. Again, paper's freely available. Go out and get it and read it. Wi-Fi. The Jericho Forum stance on Wi-Fi is that we should be regarding wireless security over the air interface as a stopgap measure, because actually if you get to a properly deperimeterized network, you don't care about the transport. It is as simple as that. The recommendation is that companies should adopt any IP address anytime, anywhere. If you're a European, it's what we refer to as a martini model. I'll explain. It was a series of adverts in the 60s and 70s in Europe. Big cinema adverts, theatre adverts, running on the big screen. Very expensive, very flashy. And the tagline was, at any time, any place, anywhere, there's a wonderful drink you can share, it's martini. So, there we are. It's in the European psyche. But anyway, any IP address, any time, anywhere, is what Europeans refer to as a martini model. So there's your piece of trivia for today. Again, paper available, go get it. Voice over IP. We were joking earlier, there is no such thing as a secure voice over IP protocol. The trouble is we need one desperately, because we're being asked more and more to put it out through our borders. So, you know, it's flawed, isn't it? There's a whole load of flaws in this, you know. Data. I had one of my businesses in North America. Thankfully, we sold them now to Kerry Foods. But when the slammer worm came in, it infected their computers on their site. And they then went to pick up the phone to actually call support. guess what the controller for voice over IP was built on? Windows. No voice over IP, no telephones anywhere in the building. So, yes. Do we really want voice over IP to share our same infrastructure? Nice cost savings, not very secure. Ultimately, if we're going to do it externally, which is what we're talking about, and obviously in a deperimeterized network, we are moving to the point where the boundary between internal and external becomes the same. We need to do it. We need to get it secure. And the question is how. And we need to address this pretty quickly, because it's coming out 2 to the dozen at the moment. It has to be secure out the box. So, you know, if you think about it, it has to be secure out the box. It has to be capable of withstanding attack. We saw, who was at the voice over IP demo where they were taking down the Asterix and all the phones and rebooting them? I thought it was brilliant. It was a great talk, that one. Has to be capable of withstanding attack. Has to be able to remotely secured and maintained. You know, where's the protocol that says I'm going to update the BIOS on this phone? Doesn't exist in the standard. Strong, flexible mutual authentication, so you know which phone's connecting to your system. Has to filter extraneous protocols. Yeah, has to allow phone security management so that the central controller can set the features of the phone. Has to allow for flexible data encryption. Has to allow for IP stack identification. Yeah, the whole lot. None of that exists at the moment. We wonder why it's broken. That's because we let the telcos define it, rather than security professionals. Again, paper available from the Jericho Forum website. This is getting monotonous, isn't it? Paper available from the Jericho Forum website. Web access. I have 10,000 PCs running around in the outside world, and of course, the problem is I've got a CFO who's got his corporate financial results and is sitting in a hotel in New York. Back in ICI, corporate headquarters, his secretary is sitting there doing email. I'm protecting one with firewalls and border security, web filtering, egress filtering, incoming filtering for malicious content. Guess which one? Yeah, you guessed it. The secretary doing email, not the guy with the corporate financial results. Again, what's wrong with the solution? Well, the solution is we treat people differently. We have this principle that we're going to do one thing for people inside the network, and we're going to treat them differently outside the network. We need to get web access or protect our users the same, irrespective of whether they're inside the border or outside the border. Again, paper available, Jericho Forum website. That's an interesting one. That paper has gone out to 15 of the major vendors around the world, and they are all listening. So, can we change the world? The answer is yes, we are changing the world. People are actually standing up and listening. Even the existing vendors who are saying, actually, we get pretty close to what you're trying to do in that paper, are saying, oh, that's a good idea. We'll implement that. So people are listening. People are actually implementing that one. That's been a great success. Data content and protection, otherwise known as digital rights management, except, of course, it's been usurped by the media industry. Enterprise DRM, again, needs to be fixed and make properly scalable. Again, paper available. This is draft, actually. This is paper soon to be available. This will be available inside about 4 weeks. As it currently stands, it's currently being worked on. It's in pretty well its final draft. Endpoint security. Well, we all know about endpoint security. It doesn't work. The problem is NAC relies on a connection to actually trigger the authentication and everything else. As we move to protocols, where's the connection coming? Well, the answer is there isn't going to be one. So, doesn't that work? The answer is yes, it works very well in limited places like Wi-Fi networks when you actually authenticate to it, because there is a connection point at which the machine connects. And yes, you can start to use it. But when you start to move to a protocol-based stack only, NAC just doesn't work. You can get some layer 2 authentication. From a Jericho point of view, there needs to probably be two approaches. One is a true sandbox. Sandbox is currently a one-way. We need to move to a two-way sandbox, and we need system integrity checking at both ends. Again, I'll skip over that to the obvious page. Again, this has got draft written on it. The paper is due out. Again, this one's probably around about 6 weeks away. Some interesting debates going on about inside Jericho about this one. And finally, architectural security drivers. There is an architecture paper available. For those of you who still cling to your forts and defences model, this is a nice European city. This is all that's left of the city wall, sitting on an island in the middle of the city with lots of holes in it. Why? Because it's outdated. Again, this one's available, paper available from the Jericho Forum website. Future papers, trust and transitivity, encryption and encapsulation, federated identity, regulation, compliance certification, network security and quality of service. You can read them for yourself. Lots happening at the moment. Keep checking back at the website on a regular basis if you don't want to personally get involved in Jericho. We're out of time for questions. We'll take those with the panel after break. I'm just going to leave you with a thought. Can you read that at the back? Yeah. It says, Dilbert, I need a firewall data sheet. And Dilbert says, do you want the 10-minute explanation of why you should use a deperimeterized solution or a simple here you go? And he goes, I'm in sales. And Dilbert says, here you go. Yeah. Slightly tampered with from an original by Scott Adams. So after the break, we're going to look at what... Now we sort of covered why the whys and wherefores of what Jericho is trying to achieve. We're going to talk about this thing called the Jericho Forum Challenge. This is very much your session. There are about four slides, I think, just the groundwork of what we see as the timeline for it. But in terms of its content, it's very much up to you guys on the floor to say what you think makes sense to prove things for your business. So the Jericho Forum Challenge is about getting people to build demonstrator systems with some serious prize money attached. So it'll be an open forum, essentially, with a very distinguished panel who are coming up to join us after the break. So if you'd like to join us in about 10-12 minutes' time, I look forward to seeing you back here. Just to say to those folks, being I'm a good European and understand the Data Protection Act, that I'm actually recording this session. So if you don't want to be personally identified, don't say your name. Okay. My distinguished panel is assembling themselves. What we're going to talk about, part two, is this thing called the Jericho Forum Challenge. And why now? Well, the take from Jericho is very much that you saw beforehand there is an awful lot of collateral sitting out on the website. There is an awful lot of discussions going on with vendors, with manufacturers, and a lot of those vendors and manufacturers are actually getting actively involved with Jericho. The feeling is that we are getting very rapidly, if we are not already there, to the point where we can start producing viable demonstrator systems that prove this stuff works to a doubting world out there. If you look at the press releases that you might have seen recently, BP or BP Amoco have just taken 18,000 users off their internet and put them off their intranet and put them working on a daily basis on the internet. Why? Because there's a return on investment. They are saving an awful lot of money. And actually what they're finding is those users are more secure. Because, yeah, why? Because they're applying a different level of security they've had to get those users to operate securely on the internet. And they're operating to a different standard that the legacy users on their supposedly safe intranet. So why now? The acceleration of large businesses, other organizations want to work directly on the internet. Our feeling very much is the world is ready for deperimeterized thinking to take center stage. It's in the psyche. We want to challenge the world to say, get out there, start producing some viable demonstrator systems. And we're prepared to back that up with some money. So what we're looking at in terms of timeline is two things. This year, now, happening today, launch the Jericho Forum Challenge. DEF CON, if you're at DEF CON tomorrow, we're going to be doing a sort of repeat of this. It's a cut-down version of the first part and a different slant. A separate challenge for DEF CON 2007 to actually break the demonstrator systems, because it's no good building the stuff if it's easily broken. So the concept is very simple. Produce a demonstrator system. What's a demonstrator system? We're going to talk about that with the panel in a minute, which is why I'm recording it. We want your inputs on what you would consider to be a viable demonstrator system. We've had lots of other inputs from other people. We're sort of keeping those quiet at the moment because we want, you know, some out-of-the-box thinking. But ultimately, what will happen is DEF CON 2007, we're going to try and break them. So, two challenges in one. August 2006 to May 2007, clarify sponsorship and prizes, register interest to actually take part, pre-Black Hat and DEF CON 2007, submit papers, Black Hat 2007. We're expecting that some entrants will actually get submit papers and get them accepted and present them next year. If we get enough papers and enough entrants of decent quality, you might well see a complete Jericho track at next year's conference. Who knows? We wait to see how many people want to take part. The key thing here is that all the entrants who take part are going to need, under the principles we've talked about before, full architectural information publicly available, which should make it fun for the hackers, because they're going to know how they built their systems. And ultimately, the judges here next year will make an assessment of the submissions for viability for corporate deployment. In other words, you could build a thing using 3,000 IPsec tunnels all over the place, all the protocols. Yeah, absolutely. Jesus. Someone's having a good laugh about that. But no, you know, you could, every single protocol, let's put it inside its own IPsec tunnel, and we're going to have all these systems with IPsec. You know, is that going to scale to a corporate environment? Absolutely not. We all know that. So, the aim of the judges next year is not only to look at the architecture, not only look at what's been submitted, but the key thing will be, is will this work and scale inside a corporate environment? Because if it isn't, it's not viable. DEF CON, nice and simple. Plug them in. Let's try and break them. And again, invite people to break them, prizes for breaking them. Simple as that. Results are very simple. If it survives the entire time at DEF CON with no one breaking into it and operating in accordance with the parameters, they score a 1. If it's broken inside 10 minutes, they score a 0. And we literally multiply that number with the judges' comments from here, and we end up with a winner. In other words, it might be great architecturally, but if you can break it inside 10 minutes, the multiplier is 0 and it scores 0. Because it's no use for corporate deployment. If it's going to survive, it scores a 1. In terms of sponsorship, currently we are in discussion and looking at prizes for the main prize, an all or nothing prize. Just the same as the recent DARPA challenge out in the desert. It's an all or nothing prize, but we are talking to people, and figures in the regions of $250,000 are being discussed. Currently, we have this underwritten to the tune of $50,000. So at that kind of prize money, we think it's a viable competition, which is why we're standing here announcing it today. Secondary sponsorship, smaller amount, mainly because, you know, you turn up on the day or register beforehand and take part. But ultimately, probably we're looking at 3 prizes, top prize being $10,000, which is not bad for a weekend at DEF CON. So. Okay, your panel. Gentlemen, do you want to run down the panel and introduce yourselves? Nothing else, that'll test the microphones, because we didn't test them beforehand.
You might have to switch them on. Well, that works. Yeah, just shout.
Yes. Hello. We'll start from this end. My name is Henry Tang, and I'm from Philips International, headquartered in Eindhoven. No, actually, it's Netherlands. And the company headquarters in Amsterdam, so people do recognize the place. But in terms of the actual work and the corporate, it actually is working out of a town called Eindhoven. Lovely town. You know, welcome if you have a chance to visit. And my role in Philips is primarily to focus on the enterprise security, primarily on the enterprise security compliance management. And also Philips is a member of Jericho Forum.
My name is Bob West with Echelon One. We're a startup analyst firm comprised of CISOs. And up until about a year and a half ago, I worked primarily with banks over the last 20 years in large corporations, the last 12 years in security, and before that in LANWAN design, implementation, and management.
I'm Steve Whitlock with the Boeing Company. My role is our long-term security strategy and overall security architecture.
My name is Justin Simani from VeriSign. I run the information security group at VeriSign to protect things like PKI and making sure that you're able to use your certificates in a manner that actually works.
Is this the year PKI?
What's that?
Is this the year PKI?
There's only one PKI.
My name is Michael Hamlin. I'm the Chief Security Engineer of Resilience. My job is finding new and inventive security technologies to put on high availability appliances, and by night a part of the research group Conchoto that runs the hacking competition at DEF CON.
Okay, very simple. Here's the if you can't read it down there, it says what would constitute a fair and realistic demonstration system. In other words, if we want to produce something, a set of rules, a set of conditions, a set of criteria for the competition, what would you need to take back into your corporations and businesses need to see demonstrated as part of that system? And we'll get the panel to kick off, and then we'll open it up to the floor. And this is very much, you know, your discussion, so it's what you want to see. Feel free to challenge if people say, you know, if what you think people say is rubbish, I wouldn't want to see that, or doesn't go far enough, or anything else. Here's your chance to say what you think. So who wants to kick off?
So I think one of the things that I would like to see is when we take the multiple layers of problems within a typical application, from end user to data integrity to data management to network layout to how we actually secure those tunnels to third parties, et cetera, it's actually picking an application that comprise of all those problems and really having that be the environment in which we look at. So when we look at your typical, like the example that you were given in regards to PeopleSoft, I think it was PeopleSoft. So you actually have multiple layers of problems that go into there, and I don't think you really even talked about the data protection model of it as opposed to some of the network connectivity issues. But I think that would really demonstrate the multiple layers of solutions that need to be driven in most companies that have those problems today.
Yeah, I'm looking at this from a garden variety end user in a corporate environment. I'm thinking, so okay, so I need to have LAN access, I need to have email, there's internet access, and then potentially access to applications X, Y, and Z. And that I don't think would be relevant, because you just don't know, you know, what the specialized applications.
Okay, so standard business applications, email, calendaring, potentially IM.
Right, right.
And then Word or word processing, yeah, on top of that, spreadsheets,
yeah,
probably
typical,
with...
Yeah, typical office automation applications.
Okay.
So I think going back to what Justin was saying, I think in keeping in mind, so assuming that I'm out there and this has to be supported on the internet outside of the infrastructure, being able to understand, okay, how can I control this stuff and have the right level of integrity in each of the components of the sandbox.
Okay. Henry.
Yeah, this is Henry. In terms of what would constitute a fair and realistic demonstration system, I would put on my, let's say, compliance officer hat, and then basically look at it and say, if this system was basically brought to Philips, you know, what do I actually, you know, what type of issues that I may have to use the system to solve? Or what actually more risk that the system will increase or actually reduce? So I think it's more of a risk criteria that I would try to look at this. And in particular, I don't know how many of you are actually working with the auditors, IT auditors. To a great extent, I very often look at the auditors as a way of a business measurement or performance measurement that they come in and they measure how well is an organization doing. Now, you know, there's a sort of a love-hate relationship always with the auditors. And I would actually also put on my sort of audit head to think that if we have the system from a control perspective, is it basically bringing more control or less control? And then if it's less control, how do we actually analyze the situation to basically come up and say, you know, in the past audits, you have a control environment. Now it appears that from some view that the controls are less. How do we actually explain the situation with a certain rationale of, in this case, basically more of a risk assessment to the auditor to say the system is actually justifiable because of these reasons?
Thank you.
So I have a little bit of a pain. Being a former auditor with Pricewaterhouse and now being on the other side of the fence where not only are we being audited, but we actually manage the internal audit functions. When we look at the series of controls that, you know, the PCAOB drives down for ITGCC, et cetera, there's a lot that's really missing. It's really the baseline bar where all the companies should be. However, if we're building something that, in my mind, should withstand an onslaught of actually intelligent individuals, then I think of, you know, malware. How do you actually protect about that? How do you actually do detailed analysis over input parameters? And all those things are not generally looked at or reviewed under a general controls perspective for IT. So I think the solution that I would like to see is how do we encapsulate all of those major issues that we have a problem with, both network, personality traits, what have you, into an application that it really can withstand intelligent individuals. Yeah, in my mind, I see it as really two-part. One, there's a threat model, and then there's really requirements of supportability. So what we have in typical companies is that it needs to be widely disparate, not only from a support perspective. You have multiple individuals, you have multiple organizations, be it from a system administrative level or a development level, or et cetera. You also have different attack models that go on top of the application as well. So it's pretty much layered in my mind of what it actually needs to accomplish in order to be successful.
So actually this brings up a very interesting discussion, because what we're really looking at, let's say a fair and realistic demonstration system. Now part of the Jericho form principle is that it's not going to be one size fit all. So I think it's important to understand, and maybe part of the criteria is to lay out the different scenarios that we're looking at and maybe describe them in more of a business type of scenarios, and then sort of rate them or evaluate them based on the different business scenarios. So in that case, you could get a fair view of different perspectives depending upon what scenario you're actually analyze the situation with.
I wanted to add a couple qualities to what's already been said. Paul mentioned earlier that we have more identities from non-Boeing people in our system than Boeing people, and the ratio is about 125,000 Boeing identities to about 160,000 non-Boeing identities from several thousand companies. So I would be interested in the quality of scaling, both quantity and differences, I guess, between very different enterprises. I realize something like this probably wouldn't itself scale, but it would have to demonstrate the potential to scale. When you get large numbers, we have about 50,000 business partners, but they're not all electronic, although a lot of them are. But there are a lot of things that work very well with a few companies or in the small that fall apart large scale. As an example, we are building an our own authorization system that we started because we couldn't find anything workable in the marketplace. There are a few potential companies now, but that's enforcing export regulations for the data for the 787, which we're currently designing. And that plane is being designed in different countries around the world by different companies. It's sort of a joint effort. Mitsubishi, for example, are designing a large part of the wings. And we run into weird export issues with that, where we used to just have to say, no, you can't see this entire system. The system we're building will actually allow certain people, based on their credentials, their, in the U.S., U.S. person status, which is sort of citizenship, but not exactly, and the exact piece of data, return an answer down to the granular level of a piece of data or a field out of a database, and audit everything as well, or supply the audit records.
I would actually like to go back to what Henry was saying, and I think part of the problem that we need to define right now is what are those use cases and requirements that we would have that really define out what this application would make up.
Okay. From the floor. Go. No, that's hopefully what you're contributing to at the end of the day. The assumption so far that it will be hopefully a set of business problems which will constitute multiple devices. And the sort of... No, we're building certainly business systems. I don't know about business process behind there. I mean, the thinking, especially behind the large amount of money that's attached to this, is that there needs to be some fairly serious work gone into this. So it's not just a question of throwing, you know, a box or two together with a few protocols behind it and saying, well, I now have a secure system that potentially might scale. You know, we're looking at probably at least five or six boxes all doing different functions with laptop, capable of accessing it with public access, with private access, and probably some form of SQL backend on at least one system. Certainly as a fundamental prerequisite, you'd have to be able to demonstrate that at a minimum. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I mean, what we want as part of the challenge, and one of the reasons that I haven't come up and stood here today and said, this is what the people who came before you have thought of, do you agree or don't you agree, is the challenge very much wants to generate out-of-the-box thinking, if you pardon the cliche. So it's very much about saying, you know, we want to prescribe something so that it makes it fair and equitable, but what we don't want to do is make it so prescriptive that everyone comes up with the same solution, because then what's the point? What we want to do is get some really novel thinking out of this and a contribution to the debate.
Hey, Paul, can I take another step in redefining? So I think the basic premise right now is given most corporate environments, you know, there are no borders to networks, and given the reality of the systems that we use right now, if I put them out on the internet, or even just functionally within our corporate infrastructures, there's a fair amount of risk. So the thinking is, let's create an environment that withstands a lot of scrutiny, and assume that there are no borders, that I could put all these systems out on the internet and they should function effectively. And so what's a typical baseline office environment? And I think that's the objective, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we want to achieve here as part of the challenge.
Yeah, it is certainly one of the things that's been looked at in terms of, you know, here I have a typical, you know, corporate Dell lap. It's about as boringly corporate as you can get, you know, Microsoft Windows, Dell, Cisco. But yeah, can this sit there here in Caesar's Palace, and can I access all my everything I do on a day-to-day basis inside the office without necessarily having to fire up a VPN tunnel to do it?
Yeah. So in my mind, given that, the things that I would be looking at is, so we talked about, you know, I need access to LAN, email, internet, and I need to be comfortable that, A, they withstand a high level of of aggressive attack, and at the same time that I can have the basic principles of confidentiality, integrity, availability, scalability, reliability, all those kinds of things built in.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there are no borders right now. But fundamentally, there are none in garden variety corporate environments right now. I mean, you think of a typical environment, who needs to access it? Well, I have employees, I have contractors, consultants, business partners, competitors that access my infrastructure right now. And fundamentally, most organizations historically have said, I trust my network, and the reality is you can't.
Yes.
Can I just add something? I mean, that's probably one of the best examples. If you just take Skype, as you mentioned, it penetrates the borders. That's part of the problems that are plaguing things today, is that you punch a hole in your firewall for HTTP. What's going through that hole? HTTPS. There's no telling what's coming through an HTTPS hole in a firewall. We can't control it. So you know we have that problem. So what if a company wanted to use Skype as the basis for its entire communication protocol? Well, we know that we can't use Skype out of the box because there's no remediation, no audits. If you're a financial organization, you can't turn around and say, well, we conducted all of our brokerage transactions over Skype. We have no records. The SEC will close you down tomorrow. But what if you took that and said, okay, here's the challenge. Take Skype. Now make it a viable, scalable corporate solution that follows these tenets. That's the type of a challenge that we're looking for, is somebody to say, how do we solve the problems we have today as a business following these tenets, these 11 commandments? Right. It's
yeah,
just
but
one
what,
example.
What I'm hearing, going back to Bob's thing, is that if you want a typical business environment of what people do on a daily day-to-day basis, one of the things that people do on a day-to-day basis is make phone calls.
Right.
So maybe we want to add secure VoIP, whatever it is, into the mix. It is about the data, ultimately, but the problem is, as has been pointed out numerous places in this conference, it's all about attack surface as well. So if you want to manipulate the data, can I subvert the machine to do it? So do we need to do NAC? Well, that's an interesting question. Data at the end of the day on my control systems that run chemical plants, yes, sure, it's the data we need to secure, but at the end of the day, we actually need to do some other security around making sure the process control system doesn't get subverted so that the plant goes bang. Because it's very bad for the press when chemical plants go bang, so I'm told by my PR people. They don't like it. Yep. No, you're right. Sorry, at the back there. Yeah. Yes, and is corporately scalable. Because at the end of the day, you could design an architecture that follows most of the Jericho principles, as I said, just by putting IPsec tunnels everywhere and hardening everything. Is that corporately scalable? The answer is no. So, yeah, it's good. I mean, the ultimate criteria is, yes, it follows the Jericho principles. Yes, it does these demonstrable things, and these demonstrable things is what we're trying to draw out of people. But ultimately, the acid test for the judges is, will this scale? So, could I take this and could I scale it into my corporate environment?
Would it be prudent to actually define, maybe, or just provide a list of business problems in which the solution would be there to solve? Not necessarily from, this particular technical widget, however, but, is it an ERP? Is one particular problem that needs to be created and how individuals connect to it? Is it VoIP for multiple communications? I mean, there's a couple of very fundamental functions that the businesses would really want, which actually gives you multiple options of creating a solution for.
Yes, go.
Sorry. Well, I personally have, like any good security person, I have very strong opinions about things. But where we've actually altered certain networking devices in order to provide application-level security, at the end of the day, the application needs to be able to protect itself as a primary method of defense. We can go down the OWASP model or the, you know, everything else in regards to discussing the various areas of attack models over an application, what needs to be done. But I think it's very important for all vendors, I mean, us being one of them as part of the role that we have, but also the vendors that we leverage, be it Cisco, et cetera, who are they, to really ensure that they are actually implementing secure coding methodologies to create secure code. I think over the past couple of years, specifically the past three, you've seen a lot of reinsurgence of this. And I say reinsurgence because the individuals over the mainframe errors of 30 years ago could tell you how to do a buffer overflow. They're actually implementing a lot of very good methodologies, specifically over government and financials. It's not the hear-all and end-all, but it's a very good start of where security needs to go as far as an area that's been sorely overlooked for many, many years. I think it's very critical. I think without that, you know, it's what's the point?
Well, actually, yeah, what I like to say here is actually the application, obviously, yeah, it does require to be built with a secure architecture in consideration. But part of the challenge here is that the way the business is moving is basically today we're all constrained within a corporate environment, and every user will have to go through the corporate arrangement and then talk to the business partner. You know, in my view, you know, where the business is going, they really want to basically to say, in a position to say, I have a computing device, and I want to now take maybe an application that was developed by my partner, put it on my system, and I can work with their system without trying to go through all the firewall application. Well, let's put it this way: to apply for adding a, you know, firewall rule in the firewall to let me go through, right? And vice versa as well. So if let's say Philips has an application, basically we will give the application to our partner, and they don't have to go through the pain of this, you know, review and then approval process. They can put it right there and then run it. Now, the challenge here is, you can imagine, is that now my device is actually pulling or running or connecting to another device, and while I am exchanging data with the other partner, I still have to be careful that I only exchange what I want to exchange, and then the rest of whatever is on my system, the data, is basically secure to the extent that even if something happened and someone was able to pull it away, that data is still protected. Right. So,
if you want a quick build on this, and if you want to go and I hate to do it, but another plug for the Jericho Forum website, available on the Jericho Forum website. If you want to go and look at the slide set from the two full-day sessions, one in London and one in Chicago, that we did earlier this year, BP presented their roadmap of what they were doing, taking 18,000 users off their intranet onto the internet, but also a look at where they were going. They are talking about giving their workers IT allowances. Here is an IT allowance. Go down to Home Depot, PC World, Walmart, wherever, buy yourself whatever kit you want out of your IT allowance to work. No more corporate machines. No corporate laptop. Just buy one down at CompUSA. I think today to do it would probably be corporate suicide. but as an aspirational goal, I think it's got a lot of merits. Yes, it is. And one of the things, and it said you can see it from the BP slides. But one of the things they are doing is that for every user that they take off the intranet and put them onto the internet, they get a driving license. So they actually, you have to do the training, get the driving license, and then you can do it. And yeah, effectively, everyone to some extent becomes their own security engineer. I said it was an aside, and I don't want to go down too much of a rat hole on this one, but it's an interesting aside in terms of some of the direction, but they're deadly serious about doing this.
Would
Yeah, if you haven't discovered it out there, humanfirewall.org is a great website for resources on user training.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, any organization has to have the right balance of people, process, and tools. But I think going back to the assumption here is that from a technical infrastructure perspective, the current state environments do not allow us the right level of security, or my clients in these days, the right level of security to effectively manage an organization and protect information effectively. And so that's ultimately what the challenge is all about, right?
And the other thing that's going to have to happen is, like, whatever solution they come up with is going to have to interoperate with existing controls, or, you know, you might want to have a question that even if it's something that may be considered legacy by Jericho, like a firewall, you're going to have to deal with the fact that you have 500 firewalls today, you know, throughout your organization, and you have this segmentation that maybe goes against the principles that you're trying to, but there's going to be a transition of 3 years before you ever get away from
it. Oh, yeah, the migration problems are going to be large, and don't underestimate them.
I just want to come on. I think that's one of the things that absolutely everybody has to understand is deep perimeterization doesn't necessarily mean taking all the firewalls out. Firewalls are still going to always be a necessity because admins will always make mistakes and open things that should have never been opened on a box. That's that human factor. But it's more about having a set of defined business protocols you allow through your firewall. Maybe it's SSL. And just saying anybody can talk SSL through the firewall to these business appliances. Well, we won't build access control lists on the firewall to say that Gordon can talk to me and Paul cannot. I'll say anybody can talk SSL, and whoever certificates authenticate right on the application, that's who gets the data. So we're saying don't try and use the firewalls to control the applications. Use the firewalls to let the business applications through, enable the business, and use the firewalls to throw out the garbage, the attacks, the denial of service, the protocols that should have never come through, like Telnet. If it's not a secure protocol, don't let it through the firewall. They're always going to be a fact of life. Plug into the internet, plug into the Wi-Fi down at DEF CON, you'll understand why you're going to need a firewall. On the application side, you're asking about secure applications. It's absolutely something that has to change, and that's one of my passions is if you come down to DEF CON at the CTF network, you're going to see 9 teams hacking 40 custom applications we wrote for the teams. It's all about being able to run secure applications, and we're challenging people in these conventions now to learn how to write and secure applications for this reason, because the firewall is not going to control the access to them anymore. The firewall is going to say everybody can talk to this application as long as it's using this secure business protocol. The firewall's role is basically going to be what we used to think of an access control on a router. It's going to stop the garbage.
Yeah, I want to come back to the user awareness and actually talk about accountability, which is also associated with the challenge. When we say that users have a larger responsibility to basically, fulfill their part of the commitment and responsibility to make a system or their operation secure, there is part of the challenge to make sure that there is what we call the trust, that we trust the user will fulfill their responsibility, but also the verification part. And in a very open internet situation, the verification actually becomes quite a challenge of its own. Because to think about this, today I would assume that most large enterprise would have some kind of a proxy server that actually you would try to monitor what is going through, at least what URLs are being accessed, and there's certain blacklist or no-go list. But in a more open internet situation, those types of proxy servers probably would not exist. You may have a site that maybe have 100 users that are working out of there, and they may have some kind of a very simple, I don't know, Linksys router, but there's no proxy. And then how do you actually enforce your what we call the accountability here? Right. So accountability actually becomes a challenge as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Down the back. Yes, absolutely. I think probably the answer is no. There will need to be a set of assumptions that DNS exists and can be trusted. We all know it can't, but you know, we have to start somewhere. There'll be some external dependencies. I think that will be a given. That they're there, you can use them. Okay, fair enough. No, that's a yeah. Point taken. Yeah, I mean, I in terms of things that I think we're counting out at the moment, one is probably the competition will bar denial of service attacks. The assumption will be because you are operating on an internet, therefore quality of service cannot be guaranteed, and therefore denial of service attacks are not fair game. That's certainly the thinking. I mean, feel free to challenge it. I mean, I'm not. This nothing's cast in stone at this point.
I'll challenge it.
Sorry?
So, what I would say on the DOS route is, you probably need to throw out the line rate saturation kind of issues, but your application should very well be able to handle
yes.
whatever defined line rate or those transaction types.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, you
okay.
have a, you know, there should be no application DOS attacks in this situation. There's no reverse back end of one UDP packet requests a 5 gig file from the application kind of situations. But yeah, it should be able to withstand.
It should be able to intelligently handle a DOS attack. But ultimately, it's not fair game, certainly as far as the DEF CON challenge part of this, is to sit and DOS it for 2 days and say, well, it doesn't work, does it? Sorry? Anyone can line saturate, yes. I mean, ultimately, it has to intelligently handle, you know, when it doesn't, when the line saturates, such that it doesn't fall over or crash or do something untowards. But ultimately, it's not fair game to do it for 2 days. Okay. One of the thinking is that certainly we get it independently verified in terms of it meets what they've set out in their architecture paper. Whether we get it independently tested, again, thinking has been thrown out that we get someone like a Qualys, if nothing else because they're Jericho Forum members, to do an analysis of what they can see from their point of view at it, what vulnerabilities exist, what they can actually physically, you know, see just by probing the line. Sorry? The funding works that you fund it. It's as simple as that. the reason for having a large amount of prize money behind it is that it's shared risk. So you stump up the time, effort, and money to scrounge the kit, fund the kit, however you want to get the kit, and the time and effort to put it together. The thinking very much is that probably it will be a collaborative effort. It will require components from a number of sources and organizations to help sponsor things. I doubt that any one individual at this level could be able to put a credible entry in, but potentially a large, you know, a team of individuals could. Targeted at university departments, perhaps. So the computer science, you know, department will put in an entry. And then again, corporate organisations, vendors will put entries in, is the thinking at the moment. But I prepare to be surprised. Who knows? But yeah, shared risk model. That's why the decision is it's an all or nothing one prize. Akin to the, I mean, it's the same way that DARPA did the unmanned vehicles in the desert challenge. Single prize.
So, have we defined what a fair system is yet?
What a system is?
I mean, in my mind, there's multiple options here, but what is that sub-list that we actually can define of, you know, is it an IM server or... You know, are we talking about a little bit something more robust? And, well, ERP is one of them. It's common in all applications, be it Oracle 11i, PeopleSoft, what have you. It has a lot of requirements around it about everybody effectively in the company needs to access it at some level. There's a lot of very sensitive data, general ledger, HR databases that are in there, and that's just one of the ones that we use. And we can definitely go down.
Let's take that.
Okay.
So I would actually say a system that comprises both the general ledger and the HR, or that data content and those functions that I have. And in my mind, I don't know, and maybe it's more of a discussion, are we expecting an application to fully mimic those functionality? I think that might be a little bit too much to ask. But, you know, in regards to the connectivity, the secure transactions, the secure communication, the data protection, the availability, et cetera, I mean, those are all the things that can be defined out of it. I'm very much interested in the application layer controls. However, I don't think we need to duplicate 11i in order to really prove a point one way or the other. Yeah, I mean, that might take a couple of weeks. So. I think that would be the challenge, and actually it's probably a challenge very much today.
That already exists with just HTTPS right now. Skype is just one example. We have Lotus, Outlook. They all have SSL mode where you can take documents and open it up anywhere without VPN and all the people.
Right, but I don't see Lotus Notes as an ERP system.
Citrix, any application, all for WebEx, any application.
No, I agree.
I'm just saying that we have a large number of examples already.
I'd like to see something that's more distributed than the ERP system. As a test case for this. You know, because ultimately if it's an ERP system, what you're going to get is someone who's building one big central server and protecting it and then having HTTPS interfaces and then certain controls. I don't think it's a good model.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think beyond system single application. Think system as in
ecosystem.
You know, a system.
Yeah, ecosystem.
An ecosystem, yeah. Yes. Yes, the trick is to make it as level a playground as, you know, playing field as possible, without dictating it to the point that there's no initiative, and no out the box thinking, which is going to be hard. Yes.
Things along that line.
Yeah. Up the back.
Well, it may come into the funny, but...
Yeah, it's the flexibility to implement in a corporate environment is going to be the interesting one I think the judges will be wrestling with next year.
I personally like the business requirements model.
Yep. Yes.
So are we building a brand new system, like a new operating system, running an application, or is it something that's already on the market?
No, I think as much as possible to use what's available on the market today. But yeah, ultimately, yeah, exactly. I mean, that, if you want to write your own secure protocol from scratch, that's your choice. Go for it. That rules out AD then, doesn't it? Sorry. That's the cynic in me coming out again. Yes. Absolutely, yes. Corporate viability is certainly part of the criteria. Yeah, I mean, we want something that's realistic, and ultimately we can go out and implement if we want to, you know, use some of it, all of it, part of it, mix and match from the competitors. I mean, that's the aim behind everything that you propose, has to be, you know, documented and openly available. And sure, if you're going to use a bunch of proprietary protocols against someone who doesn't use a bunch, you know, who uses a set of open protocols, well, again, that's going to be part of the criteria, because that's the Jericho Commandments. Yeah, it needs to be complex enough to make it a decent challenge, certainly with that amount of prize money attached to it.
Yeah,
I think what I'm hearing today is fairly much sort of some broad agreement that it has to be defining business requirements as opposed to, you know, straight technical solutions, yeah. Which is good, which is good validation. It's what other groups have also supported. So,
the notes that I've been taking so far, for whatever it's worth, is that there needs to be access to LAN, email, internet, VoIP, potentially some interaction with HR and GL at a principal level. Being able to access the system remotely, share documents from a worker perspective, and being able to print. So in my mind, that would be some sort of baseline somewhere in there, plus or minus A, B, and C. There are certainly applications that do that. The question then becomes, what's the level of integrity, and can I rely on them in a garden variety corporate environment to be inherently secure? And to that end, I would say the answer is no.
I think people are doing bits of it people are doing bits of it well in certain point solutions, but they tend to be based on stuff that either won't scale or are very hard to manage.
If I look at a typical corporate environment, I would say the answer is no. And back to what Paul is saying is that I don't think there's anyone that I know of that's using a holistic approach that makes it this secure or the level that should be ideal. And that becomes a corporate and political issue, right?
Yeah.
That's good. Nothing wrong with healthy skepticism. It's a reference system, effectively.
Yeah.
Is what I'm hearing.
Right. Yeah.
That's what you want, is a reference. Sorry, gentleman there.
So we talk about
Henry, you're our compliance officer sitting on the panel. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I'm currently working on a position paper for Jericho on this very subject. And basically, just to bring this in context, basically we're looking at, okay, Jericho is creating a change. So the question here is, this change, what's the impact to the current IT audit framework or control framework? And what is the risk? And the risk basically is that if there's a gap between the current practice of the auditors, and I can give a few examples of their framework, then certainly that gap translates to a potential risk. Right? And currently, the current thinking is, in terms of understanding the risk, is to look at, let's say, the big four. They very much follow what we call the COBIT. I think maybe a few of you are familiar with the COBIT IT control framework. So one of the things that we're planning is actually to take the Jericho principles and then, you know, examine or measure against the COBIT framework to see, at least at the principle level, do we have a major gap there? And a gap, basically, then have to understand, is that a major risk for future audit and the way that they actually do the audit or their approach. And then if the principles are fine, you know, because maybe the way that COVID is written is fairly generic, then we also want to go down to the next level of details, because if you look at the COVID IT framework, it actually has multiple levels, a principle level, but also the detail levels. So it could be at the detail level that, you know, Jericho principles or practice is actually also creating a gap. And I'll give you one example. So for example, in COVID, very often if you look through the COVID IT framework, it talks about a central repository of configuration information. Now, in the Jericho model, would we have a centralized configuration management? I doubt it, right? Because if you listen to one of the practices, is that if I am giving an allowance to buy a laptop or some machine, how is that going to be registered and managed? Very much, I'm as a user have the responsibility to manage that system and to set the configuration to whatever needs is. Yeah.
Because it was something I was thinking about earlier. You have this allowance.
You're talking crazy.
Yeah, it's an oxymoron, isn't it? Yes.
Well, if you take the hard drive out,
then you might be C2 compliant.
No, you're right. It's an issue.
There's actually tech.
The problem is the same, whichever OS you buy.
Right.
Okay. One question over there, we're running rapidly out of time, so final question from the floor over there. Okay. Good build. Yes, thank you. Panel, final quick comments before we let everyone get away.
Let's start from the other end.
I think there's a lot of value to getting some reference systems built. There's some great ideas of some larger systems. There's even ideas on smaller technical systems. I know groups I've worked with have batted around. I mean, you can think of very small problems in corporations that every corporation has, like how do you actually control database access and who pulls what data out of a database? I'd be willing to vote 10 points to the first person that could stick a plug-in onto Oracle to actually do real database security. I don't know, but there's a lot of little problems that every company has. There's a lot of big problems every company has. What we're looking for are some reference systems that start to actually address those and not just say, stick another firewall in. That's the challenge.
Michael, thank you. Justin.
One of the things I'd really like to see is that, especially nowadays when we move over into mobile devices being directly connected into the network. I mean, it's not a pick up your laptop and your system, it's all the PDAs. And then the propagation of malware on them and the spyware, et cetera. It's a lot of endpoint of security as well as a lack of trust and the true protection of your firewalls can have over the application, the data that it protects. So the system is really, how do we combine all of those various components into a definition or an example of how to protect it? And it's not an easy task.
Not an easy task. Stephen?
A couple of quick points. To the let your employees buy their own laptop, we're not doing that yet, but one of the reasons I brought up all those other identities is we have that situation already because we have thousands of people that are physically or VPNing into our networks with machines that we don't control and have no idea what software's on them. So we didn't choose to do deperimeterize as a strategy or anything. It just happened.
Absolutely.
Partnership agreements. And the last question the gentleman back there brought up, we have thousands of applications with no people in control that are running between machines as part of our cooperative design efforts.
Yeah. Thank you. Bob?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a conversation with Paul a few weeks back in terms of my bringing up to my management and my bank one days about how the internal network should not be trusted, and this is 2000, 2001, something like that. And so bottom line is, in my mind, being able to get something on the table that's practical and can help address fundamental issues. So I've got a large corporation. How can I implement something that allows my people to do work and at the same time create the right balance that says I can function securely and raise the level of integrity in all the system, the components that make up the ecosystem, if you will. And that's what I'd be looking for in terms of building a sandbox like this.
Henry.
Yes, what I want to say is, because I've been working out of the Netherlands for a year, actually being physically in Europe and working for Philips for a few years now, the Dutch are very practical people, I can tell you. And so what I'm looking for, or what we are looking for, is a very practical solution as well. And in this case, the second requirement is that the Philips business is very diverse in the sense that we have as low-tech as you can get, like light bulbs, lighting, and as high-tech as medical, healthcare, and things like that. So it's quite a challenge just to try to deal with the different diversity even in the business requirements. So I can tell you that even if we can come up with a reference system for some type, still it will be, put it this way, the business requirements could stretch it to far more than what we're looking for or through the demonstration system. But certainly, at least, that's a good start.
Thank you very much. Just remains me to say thank you very much to the panel. Thank you very much to everyone here for contributing. It's been greatly appreciated. It has all... I just heard this thing spin down, so it fitted perfectly onto one disc. So thank you very much. It will be fed back to the powers that be. And with that, it just remains to say good night. Thank you very much. And see you next year. Enjoy the parties.